Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now entering the DGTC.
You ready for a deep dive?
And Jordan did most of the crap.
Can't believe I said that.
I've been doing this since 2008. What the fuck do I know?
Drawing hands is my kryptonite. Oh, wow.
Loading up elbow logos.
Yeah. For the show.
Welcome to the DGDC, a united team of design professionals, creatively bound to bring unique inspiration and uncommon perspectives. You can email us listener questions or topic ideas to hello@dgdcpod.com or check out our website, dgdcpod.com. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram or Twitter at dgdcpod. Plus now you can join in on the conversation. We have a Facebook group. Just pop onto our website and hit the community tab at the top. Now, on with the show. All right, guys. Well, we're back for another fun-filled episode and a good one here because this was inspired by someone got to meet in a really cool AIGA meetup last week. And before we got into it a little bit more, I kind of stopped him in his tracks and I said, let's bookmark this and get it on the podcast because it was such a really inspiring, cool little story and something to really kind of use for inspiration for anybody out there. Our guest today is David Walker. David, what's up, man? Welcome.
Yo.
Thank you.
Yeah, man.
I'm glad to be here.
I know this is going to be a blast. And I kind of gave Mikkel and Jordan a little bit of a side note on what we were chatting about and everything. But before we get into it, if you want to just give our listeners a little introduction of who you are, the designer, a teacher, throw it all out there, man.
All right. So I'm a graphic designer and an educator. I teach at Austin Peay State University. I've been teaching now going on 9 years, which is amazing.
Jeez, and
it's been a while. It's been a blast. I've done a lot. I've met amazing students and seen their careers blossom and had great colleagues. But I've got three kids, two teenagers and a baby. So life in the pandemic has been a complete adventure of a lot of sorts. I've also got a French bulldog in the mix. So yeah, my house is like very busy.
Yeah.
And a design, you know, business on the side.
Yeah. And that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Load up. I know.
I love it, man. The multi-purpose, multi-like faceted designer seems to be like the thing we all got to like strive for nowadays, right?
Yeah. My mom always said, when things get crazy, you need to get busy.
Ooh.
And so in order to not lose yourself,
that's right.
You stay busy so that you can keep pouring into whatever you're working towards or working on.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that because that kind of puts into a little nutshell what we're kind of talking today is this idea of like everything we as creatives, as business owners, as even, you know, educators as well, went through over this last year and what we could kind of learn from. And I think as well, we've turned a corner to say like, let's talk about the positives and the things that, you know, we can continue to do and not to lose sight on it. And the best thing that when Dave and I were talking, Dave kind of shared a little bit about what he had done last year. And I thought it was this really incredible kind of goal-oriented thing to self-improve or self-betterment. Would that be the right way to kind of talk about what's led this kind of conversation?
Yes, that definitely is spot on.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what happened, and because you named it like the day we all, like March 20th, 2020, like that day we all were like, the world stopped. Like what frame of mind were you in, and what sparked this kind of cool idea we're going to talk about?
All right. So to rewind to this time last year, a little bit before this time last year, my kids and I were on a study abroad trip. I accompanied a professor of mine in her study abroad class to London. Now, Wednesday, I want to say Wednesday, March 12th, we got a call. I think that date is off. It may be like March 10th or 11th. but we got a call at 2 a.m. London time.
Oh, dang.
Like 6 or 7 a.m. Nashville time, saying that the border was going to be closed.
Yeah.
Now, we were set to arrive and fly back on March 15th. And so we got back March 15th at 8:30 p.m. So we barely made it.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. So 11:59 was the cutoff period. So I'm thinking, one, the anxiety of getting back home, because we knew we were hoping flights weren't going to be canceled and that our flight would make and that they wouldn't bump our group. It was a direct flight from Heathrow to Nashville's airport. So we made it back and we get back. And on that Monday, everything shut down. So Monday, March 16th, it's like, oh, man, like, I'm at home with my teenagers. We were just out free, wandering London, like touring all the stuff and the postcards and the things we see on the TV shows. We're like, we just saw that. And now we can't go to work or school.
What a change.
So that juxtaposition was like stark. So the school had given us a week to prepare. Because we get back Sunday, we were supposed to start back to work Monday.
Hey, change everything in 1 week. No problem.
And they're like, all right, so we're going to extend spring break 1 week, and you're going to transition to online learning. I'm like, okay, so I've got another spring break, which is weird, but it's not really a break. Like, how am I preparing my students? Because I'm not talking to them. Fortunately, my colleagues and I had set up Slack, and we always like communicate projects through Slack and deliver projects through Slack, and the students communicate with each other through Slack. So immediately you wonder, man, how's this going to change my life? Like, of course, for everybody on this podcast, you're like, man, I need toilet tissue. I need Clorox wipes. And everything else. Right? I can't go to the grocery store. Instacart has become my best friend.
Yeah. No doubt.
And so that transition, I'm like, man, I've got a week to figure all this out. And so in the midst of that, my drive and my commute from home to school is 55 minutes one way.
Dang.
So in that week, I'm like, oh, well, so I don't have to go to work. So that's a gained almost 2 hours. And so that next week after I started classes, I'm like, man, like I talk to my students a couple times a week, only for an hour or hour and a half, because I'm not going to subject them to a 3-hour studio class on Zoom. Like, it's just untenable. Like, what are you going to do? And I decided in that next week that I was going to take an introspective look at all of the things I was insecure about. Well, not all of them, but a good number of them when it came to myself, my creativity, and what that might do to my livelihood, like a grand experiment.
Yeah.
And so, of course, like, the upside is that you've got tons of opportunity. The downside of being in the house with 4 other people and a pet is that you don't have any time alone. So I had to figure out a way to give myself those 2 hours of alone time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, step number one.
Right. Oh my goodness.
So, I mean, of course, like, the topic of this talk is like extra time equals extra opportunities. And so with that, I decided to write out a list of things that I thought were really uncomfortable for me.
Good.
Like, one of them that I noticed is that I had not updated my website since 2011.
Yeah.
And so I had old work on there as a professor, and Nick might be able to speak to this too. You kind of manage how much work you want to take on. And I had a fear that if I put work out there, it would attract work.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I didn't update my website, that I would basically say I'm closed for business in a way. Or I'm selective about the project.
Yeah.
And that's a weird way to think about it. I definitely should have been updating my website the whole time. But nonetheless, I was not updating my website. When I was talking to my design friends and my students about my work, I was only describing the work that I was doing and was not proving that I was a designer. I got a great project. Well, let's see. It's like, I'll tell you about the next project.
Let me paint you a word picture.
You could talk the talk with the best of them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can describe how the client experience is. I can describe the artifacts that I'm having to produce for them. I can describe how I'm delivering it and managing the physical, asset production of everything. But not showing my work. So that was like number one, right? So figuring out how to show my work in a way that was low stakes for me, that proved that I was a designer and gave me an opportunity to not worry about the criticism.
Good.
If it's not designed to a certain level, it's like, oh, I thought he would have been working on a bigger project, right? I mean, there's always that thought that I feel like us designers have.
Always. Yeah, that doesn't go away. And I'm curious because I'm kind of in that place too where it takes a lot of work to update your website all the time, right? To continuously. And I try to not just have photos and then it's done. You want to describe some reasoning behind this stuff, like a little case study, but that should take time.
Then
the other half of it is I don't want to, if I'm a professional designer, you can check out my Instagram for my most. That sucks when you have to give that answer. Mm-hmm. Check out my social media. It's the most up-to-date thing I have. It's easier just not to say anything or describe it. I'm doing this work. I don't know. You can't see it, but it's there.
So what I decided to do was, to your point, start posting it on Instagram. It's low stakes. I had limited followers. Yeah, it's so easy. It's fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I began, I think it was April, posting based on whatever prompt I saw in the news. So a lot of it was political or social things or conversations I was having with my friends and my students and colleagues. And I would just make a post and post it.
Yeah.
And so that was one, start posting work.
Yeah.
Number two was to take time to learn a new skill set in design that I'd always been interested in, but never took the time to explore or learn.
Yeah, I love that.
And so I dove in head first and decided to combine those things, right?
man.
And so I was learning things and then posting them online. And so I decided to tackle hand lettering. And so it's been a phenomenal journey. So number three
mm-hmm.
was daily personal fitness. So making sure that I was giving myself some time outside or giving myself some activity to burn calories, give myself some time to think and really reclaim that time alone.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I started a 30-day running challenge, I think April 1st. And April 31st, actually, it's 31 days in April, right? I believe so.
Yeah.
All right. So May 1st, my feet found my shoes and they went running on the 32nd day.
I love it.
My feet and my shoes went running on the 32nd day. And as of today, I've run 399 days straight, at least a mile.
Hell yeah.
That's incredible, dude. You stuck to these things, and I think that's something we'll definitely crack into, but that's fantastic.
Yeah, so it's been weird. I've got a couple friends that have done it with me, so it's not like I'm just doing it alone, and they're right there on day 399 with me, so we'll be celebrating 400 tomorrow at some point.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. All right, so then number four was saying yes to opportunities.
Yeah.
So if somebody reaches out, they want to have a conversation. Yes. If there's new work. Yes. If there's a podcast. Yes.
Yes.
new work. Yes. I'm trying and I've
good.
Opened the floodgates in that way. Right. My website was still saying no.
Yeah.
But I'm saying yes.
Good.
And then number five, entering competitions and putting my work out there to be judged.
And I love the way you really said this. You said it by saying like it was a reality check. Now, like we all have this thing that entering competitions, most of us feel like, okay, no, for credibility, I get it, whatever. But your take was so different. Tell us about what made you decide to do that.
Well, I felt like each time I would do work, and I had people, folks or clients, I had clients whose work was being entered into competitions, but I wasn't entering it.
Gotcha.
They were proud enough to enter the work, and it was winning awards, yeah. And I was taking credit, like, hey, like, this, it's going right into my dossier.
That's right.
For my tenure.
Especially if it won.
Yeah, my work won this award. I didn't enter it. My client entered it, but, yeah. You know, I yeah. did the work and it won. And so now I'm like, all right, like, if they can do it, and now I'm doing this low stakes, putting my work online to be judged, why not, like, up the ante, put my own skin in the game.
Good.
And if the client doesn't enter it, I can enter it and be told yes or no for a validation that I'm on the right track, or that I'm thinking in the right way, or that I'm, you know, just to feel fresh and all the confidence that either being all the confidence of either being awarded or the reset of being rejected, know, will give you.
I think also too, you find some ways, if you spend a lot of time critiquing work, particularly as an educator, like, it's almost like you want to put your work out there in the same way. Like, am I practicing what I'm preaching here a little bit? Right. Because it's like, how often do we put our work out there, but not to technically be judged and to be told yes, no, win or whatever. But like, I love that perspective of it, because I've always battled with that too, thinking about it as entering as a, you know, on your own, but you gave me a different perspective in thinking about it, which I thought was really kind of cool.
Well, it's great to think once we get into the profession, whether we're educators or professional designers, we don't really get critiqued by designers anymore. It's only the stakeholders.
Yeah.
The folks at the end consumers or the client as the gate holder before it gets launched to market.
Which is all still oftentimes bullshit, because they don't have the background to substantiate their opinions.
Yeah.
While acknowledging altogether that oftentimes review sessions are subjective. I mean, that's what makes design so amazing.
Yeah.
But, I just got out of one of those presentations myself. It's like head of sales raising his hand going, yeah, I don't think so. And I'm like.
Boom.
Have to bite your tongue so much sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's such, I'm so glad that you brought, I mean, you two have this in common, right? Jordan and I are not educators in a realm where we have students, right? On a regular basis. So what you're bringing to the table seems so applicable to that role. What I can relate to a little bit is just having this show. I have to practice what I preach on this show all the same.
Right.
But how often do people come to you for advice? Just in life, you know, if you're not a professor, then those instances are very few. I mean, at least for me, maybe this is a little sad. They're far in between. So it's far more applicable for me and us as a group on this show. And it keeps you in check. Holy cow. Doesn't it ever?
Like, yeah.
I'm not going to say whatever.
Oh, you got to be even more careful, because you know you could be challenged so easily.
Yeah.
I mean, right? Immediately.
Immediately. Yeah, let's be honest, right? Face to face or DM to DM, right?
Keyboard warrior.
Keyboard, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's go back to the beginning thing, and I love how you combined kind of the first two, which was the idea of like not only putting your work out there more, but finding a new thing and taking that time to say, I want to learn a new thing. What would you say to someone who wants to do this? Dude, I'm the same. When I saw that yours was hand lettering, I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. Now I totally have no excuse, right? Like, that's what I want to do more than anything, and take the time. How did you make the time? How did you say, turn the thought into action? What was it?
Well, this time I had 2 hours of my life back, right? So running a mile a day, I can do a mile. Well, at the beginning of the pandemic, I was
well, like, back at the beginning.
Yeah, like before my legs were like, I'm gonna quit at any point. I was doing a mile under 8 minutes, and at one point over that span, I was under 7. But if I can give myself 8 minutes, I could definitely give myself 45 or 30, right? And so in that time span, I'm like thinking about things during the run. And then once I started lettering, I'm thinking about things during the lettering. Like it became cathartic, right? Cool. So as a daily practice, I'm thinking, all right, let me take myself out of my current circumstance, even though I'm in it, but I can just teleport out into the work, but it's not for a client. So it's really about figuring out how to have fun again within bounds of your creative practice, right? So I really wasn't doing any commercial work with this lettering stuff. And I found some people to be accountability partners. Like at the very start of it, I asked Mary-Kate McDevitt and Simone Wilder, who have great followings on Instagram, if they would do this 15-day What I Miss Design Lettering Challenge, or I Miss Lettering Challenge. Uh-huh. And so they said yes, and for 15 days straight, I lettered alongside, and they posted, and I posted, and the hashtag went out, and there were a lot of other people that joined in on it because of Mary-Kate and Simone, because I had a paltry 325 followers at the time, and they were all mostly my friends and family, right? Like high school buddies, college buddies, like people I went to the gym with. And so with that accountability, the same with the running, I can check in and see how folks are doing. I can look at other people's work. I can research. I mean, there's like this continuum of a rabbit hole to keep finding more and more and more and more. And so with that, you know, it's after 15, day 16, I was like, man, like, I don't necessarily want to stop. Like, this is a lot of fun. It's like I got the adult coloring book out and got my Crayolas and just took some time and didn't have anything else to think about. So, but it made a major difference in my creative practice, and it made a difference in my teaching practice and in the conversation and the discourse I was having with other designers like yourself and other people. Mm-hmm. Now, because it's out there online and people are seeing it, and it's a tangible thing for them to say, oh wow, you got some great design work, or your work was crappy on this date that you posted, like that's not it could be better, right? Or it's amazing. So it absolutely changed my conversation with the outside world, which then changed my conversation internally on what I felt like was possible. So before then, do the work, shelve it, right? Do the work, shelve it. It doesn't come out. Nobody sees it outside of who it was meant to be seen by. And if somebody asks me, what are you working on now? And I tell them, and they say, oh, that's a cool project. That's as far as that conversation goes.
Yeah, when it's, you look back also, like you build this catalog, right? Like, and I'm just kind of just scamming through everything right now over and over, because like it's cool to see these first 15 days on your Instagram, like where you were to like where you are now, which that's not that long of a time.
I know.
Like, honestly, we're talking, you know, what, less than a year or something? Like, so the amount of progress, like the inspiring alone, is just being able to see like your progression through this limited time. And even to like how you compose things and how you're exploring different types of lettering, like it's really cool to see that catalog, to have that live in a place where everyone can enjoy it and get inspired by it and really like motivate, you know, like it's really motivational to see that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the first thing I saw too, was the idea that, and it's not, it feels your own. It feels like you own that. And why I'm probably reluctant to do a lot of stuff is I feel like I look at other hand letterers and see a lot of the same. And I think what I loved about yours was you brought your own sense into it and it never got cloudy with that. You know what I mean? You kept it alongside with that. And if you're listening right now and you want to see what we're talking about, it's David John Walker. It's J-O-N. So David John Walker on Instagram. That's your handle, I believe, right? So let's pump you up a few followers while we're here.
All right.
But I love that idea that you and you're kind of mixing both the hand lettering, some fonts, some really cool stuff there. And I wonder what did this year of a whole other exercise mentally do for your creative now in even other forms? How has it made your creative process better?
Wow. I mean, I've begun to integrate hand lettering into some of my professional work.
Yeah.
And so I've Ultimate. Got some pieces now going out for this this small theater or a community theater in Memphis called Hattie Lou Theater. And they do, they're like a black playhouse. And so it's in a well, great, centrally located place, and it's mm-hmm. highly visible. And so I'm like, man, like this is a new avenue, right? and just being able to kind of push it. But
yeah,
like if you guys scroll down around the time that George Floyd got killed, I posted a piece talking about like my mother crying about me turning different ages and then me having sons and a nephew. And Fine Acts out of Bulgaria, a nonprofit out of Bulgaria, called or sent an email and said, hey, we want to include you in this exhibition.
Wow.
And so now, again, I just, what, like 30 days prior, I was just tinkering and trying to figure some stuff out and trying some stuff out. And they're like, hey, we were trying to put together a collection of artists of color to do this thing for protest mm-hmm. posters to go out in the world. I'm like, all right, sure. Again, saying yes to opportunities. I'm following yeah. up on this list.
Yeah.
So I said yes to that. I didn't know what company I was going to be in the midst of. And mm-hmm. it's, you know, 11 other people that are internationally known letterers. And I'm like, right? Like, I feel like I'm just this design educator in Tennessee that has not put work out. So for it to go from me getting on my iPad and drawing out some letters to being asked by this international nonprofit to contribute a piece for protest posters to go out around the world, to then being featured, I forget who picked up. Somebody big picked up the story and ran it. And then it went, you know, it just went further and further from there. Like I ended up being asked by the Biden by Design team to produce a poster for them. So, again, not thinking about what this was going to do. I'm in an exhibition with like Paula Scher and Debbie Millman. Like, again, I'm like, how?
But
if it was a physical gallery, I would be on the wall with these same
you'd
people.
You'd be cheersing them with a little glass of champagne.
Yeah. I mean, and these are the folks that I read about in the magazines and print magazine and
totally.
Graphic Design USA and AIGA, Ion Design, and the stuff that they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, never in my wildest dreams would I be able to say I was in an exhibition with those. With those two.
I bet that to me is probably one of the best examples of just putting something out there with no intention other than what you were doing for yourself and the real and the I don't know what the right word is, but that just that effect that it was that and it rang true with someone else just shows that it doesn't matter. Then it was the quality and the impact it made rather than the name. And I love seeing that more than ever right now, because sometimes it might just be the name only that gets them in the door. And you did it with your work, and you did it. So like, just what a interesting, great story of a passion project that turned into something just quite amazing. You know,
I mean, intentionality and momentum cannot be, you know, talked about enough. Like if you've got intentions, at some point, things are going to turn in the direction that you want them to turn in. You can't say, well, if I do this a couple days, then it's going to happen. Yeah. Nah, like you got to stay on the treadmill in order to see the changes, you know, take shape. And I mean, even with the running, a former student of mine worked as an intern for Swiftwick Socks, which is based in Brentwood, Tennessee, which is like a suburb of Nashville. And because I was posting my running every day, one of the creative directors, one of the creative directors for the stock
Just
company,
stop, dude. You, this puts is out crazy. A call.
Yeah.
they put out a call and asked, does anybody know anybody that runs? We're going to just start doing photo shoots.
Incredible.
And next thing I know, like, I'm on their website. Like, you go on the website now, I'm on it, on the mission page. Like,
but, like, that's how it happens, though, right? Like, it's opportunity that comes from persistence, right?
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
I feel like it's so often, you know, it's easy to chuck up to seeing, you know, some of these letters, like, you're just so naturally good at this. But it's, like, not... I think most people, there's always a level playing field. We all start, but the ones who really excel and do some like really inspiring, great stuff are doing because one, they're obsessively passionate. So they're not going to stop. And when you keep putting yourself out there and you keep doing it because you like doing it, that's how opportunities happen. That's like a lot of it is luck, but the luck is like driven from like, hey, I saw you, you know, running, you're in this local area. Let's build something out like that. That wouldn't have happened if you weren't doing it, right? So, like, all those opportunities just come from this, like, consistency of just, like, I'm upset. I like doing it. I'm going to do it no matter what.
Yeah.
You hear so many people that have the drive to be noticed and for the attention component of social media in particular, right? If they're not feeling – if they're not getting the attention that they expect or that they desire – then the passion goes away. But that's not what kicked this off. You've heard about so many of those struggles, but it's so healthy. It's so much healthier to not be as attentive. Is it a cherry on top? Sure. I mean, who's not going to admit that? Like, it feels good to be noticed with positive feedback through and through. But with that, I guess you're going to, I mean, you did this before, you're going to get all sorts of feedback, won't you? It's inevitably going to happen in this day and age. But Jordan's so right. That's the most beautiful thing about this. And out of other stories that we've heard at Adobe Max and otherwise, we just talked about Jonathan. What's his last name? Nick.
Oh, Adler.
Yeah. Adler, thank you. He had the failed successfully story. So many people do, but he just kept going because the passion is what drove that so much. And your story is very much in line. It's so credible. It's so reputable. It truly is.
Yeah, I tell my son, who's 16, that luck simply is when preparation meets opportunity.
Boom. Dude,
like
there it is.
It's,
yeah. You got to have the back. You got to back it up.
Are they
when
attentive
luck hits.
Of your following, of your success with this? Do they bring it up a fair amount? Do they brag about it with their community? Mm. Is that a thing?
You mean my kids?
Mm-hmm.
They talk about it sometimes. I mean, they're into video games and sports and girly stuff. So
they're like, hey, Dad, make it to my video game and then we'll talk. But it's a different perspective, too. And I think what they're probably seeing is you extremely happy, extremely passionate, driven. And the persistence thing is probably the number one thing I think anyone would get from this story. Right. Because you didn't do it going like, chug, 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 someone discover me. You were doing it for yourself. And then, like we were saying, luck or something crossed that path and you had something to back it up, you know?
Absolutely. And there's just so much possibility for learning. Once you dig in that way, you learn so much about yourself and so much about your surroundings and how your surroundings are affecting you internally and externally.
Yeah.
I mean, the way I hold my hand is different, right?
Yeah,
I know the street or the streets in my neighborhood. I know where the cracks are. Like if I ran it and closed my eyes, I would step over that crack or step over or hit that one, depending on the mechanics of it. And of course, like you learn how much time you want to put in. If you know what it feels like to rush your work. Or to take time on your work. Like there's just so many things to notice and dig into that keeps that pendulum of learning swinging, you know, back and forth. So it's like, oh, I've not made it. I'm so far from making it, I have so much further to go that it's no reason to stop.
When, like, all these things are so applicable, like, especially if we're just funneling it through the focus of, like, creative work, where, okay, I'm going to take up lettering. But even in that, you're right, like, okay, your hands are going to get stronger. In lettering, it's illustration-based anyway, especially with these kind of compositions. So, like, you're probably illustrating a lot more than you have. You're implementing, yes, like, color in a different way probably, right? And, like, you're exploring, yes, like, it's not just lettering. It's like you're broadening yourself as a creative, as a designer. Like, these principles of how you're composing a shot or whatever that might be, or even just, like, you know, creative thinking of, like, how am I going to lay out these letters? Or, like, what's the topic? Can I take something as, you know, simple as, like, the bow tie, wear a bow tie, like, into a composition, right? Because that's what we do, right? We're taking information and visually making it interesting. So, like,
right,
those skills, you take hand lettering and it just broadens every touch point, I think, as a creative, right? Mentally and just, like, your output. And, like, that's the benefit of just broadening your creative horizons.
Yeah. So, I don't know if I told you this, Nick, when we initially talked, but I never had a type class, right? So in my studio art degree at Tennessee State, I didn't have a type class. And when I went to the University of Memphis, it was primarily digital and UX UI web design. I didn't have a type class there either. And so this
somehow you really got by without that type class.
I did.
It's like, I mean, when a non-creative says, "I got by without the foreign language class."
But nowadays, don't you feel like we're hearing this so much that the university, the college, the YouTube videos won, the the Linda informational videos won, the self-taught component of this and motivation to keep at it is a huge part of that too. Do we advise school? Yeah. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
You're a professor in your own, yeah, right. So, but for sure, there's a way there's an affordable way now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've taken dives into Ellen Lupton's books and other typographers' books to get a good sense of the anatomy and the composition of letters and structure and the use of the grid, you know, as far as type compositions go. Mm. But now that I'm drawing letters, it's so much more of an intimate connection, right?
With
counters, yeah, and bowls and hooks and spurs and ears and all that. It's amazing. Yeah, it's wonderful.
It's probably one of the best ones for anyone that doesn't do hand lettering. I think, to me, that's the best one to add to the repertoire of what, especially if you're so digital, to like you said, it's, and to your point too, Jordan, it opens up these other areas of your creative mind to take what you learn and bring it into something that you might be working on for one of the clients, even if it involves no hand lettering at all. You're thinking color different. You're thinking of composition, like all the things you said. And I love what that could bring to us as individual artists, you know?
Yeah. Man. Big time. And even if, like, outside of, like, hand lettering, like, even if you're just doing, like, you know, lettering design on, you know, your vector program, like on Illustrator, for me, you know, I do a lot of that nowadays. Mm-hmm. And it's made me, my pen tool game has changed dramatically in the last, like, 18 months. You know, I used it here and there for sure, but, like, as soon as I started doing more lettering stuff, my curvatures, like, it's just changed everything. Like, that's, you so learn cool, these principles of how to use that, and, you know, that opened up a lot more. It changed how I illustrate in vector. It changed a lot. Wow. Just from, like, really wanting to, like, you know, make fonts and, like, take my hand lettering into vector and stuff.
Yeah. That's
so
cool.
I've only used exclusively my iPad. I mean, with a 2-year-old, I didn't really have to fuss and mess with a lot of pens or brushes or any of that thing.
Make it simple,
but
baby.
once the world opens back up and I'm not at home, I'll have this space and time to explore even more.
Oh yeah, right? you're already in it.
Yeah, like big brushes or nibs. Like, I've not tried any of that. So it's a totally different world that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
But starting with the principles, right? Like, getting those foundational things of, like, how do letters work? Or, like, let's look at the anatomy of this letter and, like, what you can do and how things, you know, what is a counter, right? What's a hook? What's a stem, you know?
Because no one's born with that. You have to have you got to learn those. And every great hand letterer I've spoken to has told me the time they spent looking at the anatomy and those books, like you were saying, David, and looking back at those things and figuring out what are the options when you are ending the R, you know, and all these little things or whatever it is. And you're right. If you haven't challenged yourself to it, you're just going to take with what you get with a font and move on. How beautiful to have this now. And you could take all of this into the most digital, the most professional job you're working on, right? Because of what you've learned now from all this. Like you said, you got intimate with it. You know.
Yeah.
Right? I love that you shared that. And it makes sense to me without being a typographist myself. It makes sense to me. In fact, I know when you first embark, I mean, I started recently using XD and I am working the panels in my sleep, on a drive, on the elliptical. It doesn't matter. I'm like, and which is a little bit, I know admitting that totally makes me a nerd, but I don't care. I know other people have this. I may just be the only one that speaks up about it. It's crazy how that obsession, that consumption of a new tool and a new way to create can kind of take over things. I mean, I was thinking about how you mentioned on your runs, you know where the cracks are, you know the landscape, and that regular routine enables you to process and think in a way that otherwise it would be too distracting, right? If you're having to channel roots on a trail while you're trying to get your brain going and let go.
Right.
Hmm.
I get that.
Now, it's weird. Like, my question to you all, when was the last time you had a dream in color? Like, when you think about this, like, when was the last time you had a dream in color? Typically, it's black and white, and then it's over. But if you're obsessively learning something, you're in the midst of learning something, and it's part of your subconscious, it floods anytime you think about it. You can go to sleep and you be thinking about it. You wake up and you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, can you all say
that
you...
I've never thought of it that way.
Can you all say that you are aware of what is in grayscale and what's in color? Are you even attentive to that? I don't think I am, you guys. I don't think I know.
I don't think I've ever said, whoa, that was a black and white or that was grayscale. Or it lacked color. I've never said that. I feel like sometimes I'm so aware of the dream fresh when you wake up. You know, I used to even write them down because I remember doing a dream interpretation report years ago for some class. And I loved that idea, but I 100% would agree. It's in full color.
Yeah.
I think I have no doubt.
Yeah.
And is that better? Is that what you were saying? Does that mean I'm
How
creative?
Would you answer that, Jordan?
You know, I would probably align with Nick where, like, I guess I haven't thought about that, especially, like, for me, like, if whatever I think about as I sleep, I almost exclusively dream about. So, like, I can almost force a subject if, like, whatever I want to dream about, like, for some reason, it's just really easy for me to, like, it just floods into my, you know, my REM cycles, my dreaming. So, but like in terms of color, like I feel like it is in color, but also you could convince me that it might not be, you know what I mean? Like as soon as I wake up, it fleets, like it's fleeting and it's like, it goes away. And I don't write down my dreams. Some like, you know, big ones might like leave some impression on me, but you know, for me, it's usually like, as soon as I'm in the shower, I'm like, what the hell was that dream about? And it's gone, you know?
Have you guys ever realized too? Now, you just opened Pandora's box with the dreams. But what's to say the dream is there ready for you to experience when you wake up rather than actually happening in real time while you're sleeping? So a lot of times I think it has to do with how you've woken up, what woke you up, what was the first thing. And what I usually do is I go, wait, how was I there? And then I trail back. I'm working my dream now in reverse, like tracking my steps. And then I wonder, was that really in real time? Or is it just like, has it just been downloaded and now I'm experiencing it really for the first time? So I've always questioned that.
I think that applies. I think my interpretation of it is far more emotional.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's triggered based on insecurities.
Yes.
For me, oftentimes, maybe an area where I felt a high because I had a success of some sort, of some that provides a happy circumstance in a dream could be totally unrelated. But that's interesting. I do think it might be a combo of the two.
Yeah, and so. I think it's never the same. It could be totally. No. It's such a diverse thing. Next on dream interpretations.
Yeah. I mean, it gets wild, man. Like the Jack Conte, who's the CEO of Patreon, and his wife, Natalie Dawn, have a band called Pomplamoose, and like they're a YouTube band. They've been doing it since like day one on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But like they went through this whole thing of like they trained themselves to have lucid dreams so they could continue working in their sleep. And so much so that they wrote an entire like album in their sleep. So like he got up and he already had the songs to see like it. There's a great documentary, you can watch it. This is, you know, getting off track, but it's so fascinating to like see the turmoil, which is, it's also like emotionally, you know, draining to do this sort of thing. But they're like trying to crack that code of, you know, we sleep 8 hours a night. That's so much time we could be dedicating to like something else.
Can you imagine waking up in the morning and the project that's due that day was done in your dream?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I'd send it off without checking it, but like, I mean,
but like sometimes ideas, like I'll wake up in the middle of the night and like, I know I dreamt of an idea. Right. And I'll like write it down. And then I'll wake up in the morning, like sometimes they're good or sometimes like this is nonsensical.
One of my favorite ones ever was I woke up. The dream was that I got to see graphic design in the future. I got to see like 20 years down the road, and there was, and I had the designs and the logos in my mind. And that's awesome. I woke up, I was like, that was some stuff no one's ever seen before. I got a glimpse at what it's like, and I couldn't, and then it was like it faded, and I and I was like, it's like, was someone playing tricks on me?
What's norm for you, Dave? Do you oftentimes dream design, or
I've definitely been dreaming littering. At the beginning of this whole thing I was intimidated by script. I started watching videos. I started reading some books. I looked at Ken Barber's book that came out and was just in Calm Arts. I bought it and came in and I'm like, man, script, like this is nuts. And so dig into the mechanics of it, get your hands ready. And so now I'm not doing as much script, just so that everything that I post is not script. What was it last month? I think it was the month of March. I did a women's series. It was Women's History Month, and so I profiled Black women that have done things that should be noted in history. And I lettered a quote of theirs to go with it, and every last one of them had some script in it.
Yeah,
and so it's all different, and each script has a level of emotion, and they emote differently than one another. And so dig into the nuance.
Oh, I love those. Those were my favorites. How they speak.
Because type, I think, is potentially one of the most expressive things in graphic design. Where like, yes, you can do a full-blown illustration and paint the picture, but the fact that you can boil something down to like provide an emotion by just the way the letters are formed, something that simple, is incredibly like powerful. It's such a valuable tool where like expressive type, I think, you know, I mean, that to me is so valuable to like push yourself into that world and actually really obtain and utilize that as a creative. It's such a good tool in our toolbox, right? Because you can do so much with so little. And it's even also looking at these posts you're mentioning, like each one is so distinctly different and sets a different tone and a different message without even reading it, right? That's huge.
Yeah. I always think of the script as it's someone's signature. It's when you see a quote, it's typically italic or it's typically cursives in a way, you know, like a little bit more. And I think that just goes to say it's coming from speech. It's coming from vocal to me.
Yeah. And so, you know, of course, like you pair image with type or image with text, like it's a marriage. And that marriage is going to send a signal, right? Like now that Bill and Melinda Gates are divorced, they're sending a signal. They were sending a signal before, and now they're sending a signal separately. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, the same with whatever is paired with it in that imagery and that typographic combination, you want to make sure that it's right and that it emotes in the way that you see fit.
Yeah.
What was the hardest letter for you to really conquer? Like, there are just, you know, like, S is unanimously just hard to vectorize.
Oh my God. But this, like, is crazy.
But everyone has that sort of, like, the favorite letter and the one that they just do not ever want to tackle.
Yeah.
Or, like, avoid, so much that avoid it in your words.
Like the Comic Sans font thing.
Yeah, that's touchy. But S's are difficult. But what was weird in learning the script is how to make an E.
Yeah.
So at first, you know, when you're learning, and I'm assuming we are of the generation that learned how to write in cursive in elementary school, right?
Oh, dotted lines, baby.
My kids can't write in cursive, but they know how to read it because I write it.
Yeah.
If I didn't write it, they probably wouldn't know how to read it. So of course, like, when we initially learned how to draw the letter E, we would come from the bottom, make the loop, and leave out, right?
Yeah.
So in script, you come up, you make a smaller loop, and then go around. Mm-hmm. And, like, my mind was blown. I'm like, this is how every time I look at script in the wild, that E just looks perfect.
Yeah.
And I've just been looping it around, and it's just like a blown out eye, right?
Yeah, exactly.
100%.
That's right. Yeah, you noticed the difference there. And, like, your mind as a creator thinks differently as an observer.
Yeah. And then the lowercase r.
Yeah. Oh.
Like, yeah. How it can come up, you can have a crossbar and then come down, or you can have a loop at the top and then mm-hmm. come down. Yeah, it's just amazing. The R's can be totally different every time you make them, or E's can be totally different every time you make them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
And then fun, like, little things like ligatures, or, like, how can you attach or connect some letters? Like oftentimes, like, the cross of a T might be, like, the dot of an I or something like that, you know? Like, that's the stuff I really, really enjoy with hand lettering.
Where do you think this is all taking you now, Dave? I think that the coolest thing that you could probably inspire people with, not only from the story and everything, and just seeing what a cool example you set in trying to set these goals, hitting them, sticking with them. But what are you going to do next? Where does this take you?
Man, I guess I'll put this out in the public.
Because I think you explained to me what you're doing next, and I was like, this guy's never going to stop.
So I'm a design educator right now, and as of last week, I'm taking an educational leave of absence to go back to school.
Whoa.
To investigate lettering and typography at Yale University School of Art.
Isn't that amazing?
Dude, that's
talk
amazing.
About the, just the cherry on top. Like, this is, to me, like, would you have ever guessed you'd make that leap a year and a few months ago?
Oh, not at all. I was looking forward to being tenured.
Yep.
And then once I got tenured, I was going to take that minor increase in salary and go buy a home.
Yeah.
And then start investing in other stuff to get my kids ready, because my son will be, he's a rising junior. So get him ready to mm-hmm. getting him ready for college. And, you know, getting my daughter through middle school into high school. And just in going through the career.
And you're moving.
Yeah, we're moving from Nashville to New Haven, Connecticut. So my son and I will be graduating at the same time.
Wow.
Or at least in the same month.
Dude, that's so cool.
Talk about what a full circle moment on that. And then that, just that, this drive and this opportunity of extra time, what it turned into.
Yeah, I never would have applied to Yale. I mean, I never would have applied to a graduate
anything.
School
sure.
with, you know, for another MFA, but not Yale.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. I was going to say, what do you hope that this is? What's the goal after that? Like, now that you've made that and it's ready, it's coming ahead of you, what can you do? What's the goal after? Like, I mean, like.
I don't know.
Is
I
it
mean,
just
as
continual?
I'm, yeah, I think it's continual. I want to still be in academia, right?
Yeah.
So I'm still going to teach and looking forward to teaching, but it's going to open the breath for professional opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, it's really resetting the outlook of my family and changing the trajectory of what they were thinking.
Wow. Wow.
Right. Yeah. My kids have grown up in Nashville, Tennessee. When I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Our biggest thing was once we got our driver's license, being able to go from one side of town to the next side of town. I mean, and being happy about that. Not what my kids will have the opportunity to do now is to go from one state to another state.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a 40 minute train ride, they're in Rhode Island or they're in New York or they're in New Boston. Jersey. Or they can go to Massachusetts. Yeah. So that outlook for them to touch a lot of things and see how other people live at this critical time, you know, when they're developing their sensibilities and what they feel like the world is giving back to them. You know, we'll all be in this space of still learning.
Yeah.
Academically, socially, just everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Just everything.
Wow.
And every one of those was a pure benefit, not a hurdle, not a challenge. You just listed everything that would be that's good that's coming out of that, you know. And I'm you're human. I know the move and all that stuff is like pure chaos. But for you to just mention all the good things that are coming out of that just shows like such a not only is it the best move probably for you, but just that you're doing it. And I think what a result of what you've done over the last year.
Yeah. It's very cool. Power of like, I'm interested in lettering, or like, I want to set a couple small goals for myself because I have 2 hours. The power of finding 2 hours. Look at the opportunity that you made from finding 2 hours. Fucking amazing. Unreal. Like, whoa. Man.
And changing it up for everybody.
Yeah.
You know. You're definitely going to have to come back and tell us the progress report of after that and everything and what had happened. Cause it's such a wonderful story to just keep track of. Cause I don't see you stopping. And I think hopefully too, with folks hearing this, I know for sure too, like I keep thinking the same thing. It's like, what else can you do that's a betterment rather than another layer of something that's just going to clog you down? What's the thing that's going to like, so in the last minutes or two here, how do you tell someone who doesn't know how to take that first leap to trying something like this, making some different, improving themselves other than just the physical work? How do you get them to even make the first move?
Well, the reality is this: who you are today is not who you should be tomorrow. Mm. And what you're doing today is going to prepare you for tomorrow. My kids being taught remotely for a year and them not seeing their friends for a year has made them comfortable making this move from Nashville to Connecticut, right? So they're prepared mentally to talk to their friends over a video game or through text message or through FaceTime or through the apps. And then the same for me, like as far as keeping up with my friends and colleagues and clients, I can go to another space or another city and still be in touch. And so putting time to the side to invest in yourself, to figure out who you are, is the biggest investment that you can make. And if there's an inkling of interest, take the direction. Just take the direction and see where it goes.
No man, fear. I'm hearing my dad's words when I listen to you. I know. I am. And it's made me wonder if part of what you embody and what you share as values to others, including your own family, is a huge applaud to a family member of yours, a close relationship that you've maintained throughout your personal life to have this outlook altogether. I mean, because it's no doubt after meeting you today and listening to you speak that you are a professor. I mean, you're it's of encouraging words, right? That rhetoric comes so easy for you. Do you think of somebody immediately when I ask that question, a family member or a close individual that has inspired you to see the world in this fashion?
Yeah, one of my my undergraduate professors, and my children affectionately call him Uncle Herman.
Oh, man.
But it was Dr. Herman Beasley. He was a photography professor. And when I graduated, actually, before I graduated, I went on a study abroad trip with him to Bermuda. So while we were there, he had it set up to where we were doing work with the tourism department of the island. And so we created some videos and some marketing collateral for the island. I mean, granted, it wasn't that great, but nonetheless, it was practicing talking to people and getting out there. But after we returned and I graduated from school, he was a member of a Black scuba diving club and a Black ski club. And he took me on my first skiing trip out to Colorado. We skied at Copper Mountain. And after that, like, you know, the biggest fears are height and water, right? For us walking on land.
Mm-hmm.
Well, height, of course, you're in the mountains. Like, I was accustomed to swimming and that kind of thing, but seeing a different side of life and different possibilities and seeing people enjoy life in those ways that are atypical of folks in the South and atypical of folks of my culture, it was completely eye-opening. So after that trip to Copper Mountain, we also traveled abroad to other places, the Caribbean islands, been to Europe. I've been to South America. I've also gone to Asia. And now I'm doing the same thing with my kids. So I'm taking them abroad and making sure that they're saying things.
Nice.
And yeah, I mean, his influence, I mean, he was he retired from Tennessee State University. I want to say he was 76. And he was 70. And I think he's like late 70s now. So he had a great career. And I saw how having a professorial life benefits a lot of us that have mm-hmm. them, right? We have the spring semester, we've got the fall semester, we've got winters off, we've got summers off for reinvestment and recharging and recollection of the things that we needed to remember, you know, in order to teach the next generation. And so it always struck me as a selfless thing for him to invest in me, but also a selfish thing for him to invest in me, in the sense that he's up on what's current, just
uh-huh,
as I need to be up on what's going to be next for me or what outlook I could.
It's a give, yeah,
have.
It's a give and take, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So, I love that question, absolutely. Mikel. Yeah, that's something you can almost ask anybody in our field on, because you saw enough there to go like, where does that come from, right? Like in we all have our influences. That's so cool, dude. I love that you pulled a professor out of the bag over that one. That was cool.
Yeah,
that's great.
But my parents, my mom is a school administrator. My dad was a professor as well. But my father passed away early. So when I mean early, he died when I was like 24. But he had a stroke when I was 16 and wasn't able to talk. So as far as like that male voice and all that good stuff that you were born, but in your formative years, I didn't have that, but I went and found it.
Yeah.
So within the relationships, you know, it's been very integral, one, to be optimistic, right? Because I absolutely could have a different view of world of the world and life. But to always, you know, push for more and see, you know, what the possibilities are. And so it was fortunate that this professor and I bonded. That wasn't the intention.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely would have seen a lot of the similarities, you know, through my father, too, who was a professor.
Makes sense. Having that role in your life altogether.
Yeah.
And that nuance of the give and take, you mentioned selfish and selflessness of mm-hmm. that relationship and what you obtained from one another. My dad always says that his mantra is to be interesting and to be interested. And that's that two-way bridge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want people to hear you and you want to be heard all the same. Yeah, there's a balance in everything as a whole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the bigger things as designers, right? We go into these meetings, we're talking to these people, but they never hear us. And you're like, I just told you what the research said. I told you what I dug into. I talked to these people, but you still have an opinion that is unqualified. Mm-hmm. You're like, just hear me out, right?
Yeah, it's the whole active listening. Lots of people we're
that's the
totally
that's the
there.
The ever growing thing we have to learn better and better every time. I know every time I pitch or every time I do it, I'm still going like, that was great. And then 2 days later, you're like, I could have done so much better.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good, though. That's
I good. Didn't explain. Or like you said, like, I love how you said it. It's like, you're talking, I gave you all this data, but your opinion is not valid. I won't say it that abruptly next time, but I love that perspective. Because
no, I get what you're saying, though. Yeah.
It's so true. Well, this has been so cool, dude. I'm first, thanks for joining us, because like, I really just love these stories of like being able to share this with our family here at the podcast, and everything. Where can people find you online? Go ahead and drop whatever you want to do, and where they can check your workout, find you, you name it.
All right. So hilariously, my website crashed.
Oh, really?
The PHP was too old. So I had to revamp it, and I put a couple projects on there, but it's realistic.com, and that's realistic.com.
Nice.
My Instagram is David John Walker, and it's David J-O-N Walker. And then my Twitter is David_John.
Perfect. Awesome, man. Check him out for sure. You'll see everything we were talking about. Again, thanks again, David. So good to have you on here, man.
So
thanks
wonderful.
For having
yeah,
me.
Yeah, man, this has been one of the most motivational conversations I've ever yeah. had. This is fun.
Yeah. Inspiring.
And we need a progress report in a year or two, man.
All right, man. My program is 2 years, and so yeah, we can talk at the midpoint and at the end.
Bye. Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. All right, man. Good luck.
All right. Thanks so much.